Well, thanks again for joining us on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. Delighted to say we've pulled it out of the bag. I've got another top guest just to keep Simon Ferry company. We're in the company of James McPake, a former Dundee Livingston central defender, now coaching at Dundee, taking the under-20s. James, good to have you with us.
Cheers, good to be here.
Thank you very much. Sounds excited, doesn't he, Simon?
That's just the way the big man is. I was just sitting next to him at Dundee.
Aye.
So I'm used to seeing him in his pants, which I leave to your imagination.
What's he got on now? You got trousers on, eh? Good, so listen, as usual, we've got a few good topics to discuss this afternoon. We're going to speak about Joey Barton's comments in terms of the way he spoke about Scottish football. We're going to speak about the national team. They've got two friendlies coming up in the next 7 days at home to Costa Rica and away to Hungary. So how we think Alec McLeish and the players are going to do, and also the mindset that our country has. Do we do ourselves down too often? And then with our special guest James, we'll have a blether about his retirement, his route into coaching, and some of the people that he has played and worked alongside during his 15 years in the professional game. So to kick us off, we're going to speak about Joey Barton. Simon, his comments very derogatory towards Scottish football. It's lit things up here, caused a lot of debate. What did you make of his stuff in Talk Sport yesterday?
I was actually watching it when he said it. I think he's a bit of a wind up as well, isn't it? I mean, him and Brazil slaughter each other, but I think he knows he never done great up here, and he's kind of trying to cover up for the fact that he never done as well as he thought he would. But I just think he's a guy that's constantly at the wind-up when he wants a bite. I was telling Paul, we played Rangers in the League Cup when Joey Barton was at Rangers. I think beat Dundee Jazz, was it? To qualify for the last 16, yep. And we got Rangers at Ibrox. So with Jimmy Mack, we had a wee guy that plays for us, a wee ginger guy, he's a screwball. He used to run about kicking people, so Jimmy Mack put him on Barton, says, "You man mark Joey Barton tonight." So the first 20 minutes I'm looking, he's just standing next to Joey Barton. I could see Joey Barton give him a bit of laugh from each other. Keeps kicking Joey Barton. Ball gets played to Barton in 30 minutes. Wee Blockley, bang, smashes him. Red card. Referee sends him off, and as Nathan's walking off, Joey Barton goes, "Oi, come here." So he goes walking over and he goes, "Off you pop, ginger pubes." So, funny man, funny guy. Pure, I think he just loves winding people up, and he's certainly done that. Look how many. I think he's trying to cement himself on TalkSport as well. He's been a regular.
Aye. Well, you look at it, if you want to get involved in the media, when you look at, like, you take example, Chris Sutton up here, had a wee dabble in the coaching, didn't fancy it, found a niche for himself and making a good career out of it. You look at Joey Barton as well, the way he really started getting himself going on Twitter. 5-6 years ago, he basically relaunched himself after the Man City game when he got sent off QPR with a lot of negativity, and then from then, the day that Man City won the league. What do you make of him, James? Love him or loathe him?
I know a lot of his stuff's good. You hear him, but I agree with Si on that. He's just trying to get himself out there more, get people talking about Joey Barton. He came up here, and no matter what he says about this league, he was hopeless when he came up here.
Was he as good as that?
Nah, probably not.
Did you play against him, Jay?
No, nah. I was injured when he came up, but I watched him. Miles, a better career than me, better player than me, but for whatever reason, when he came up here, he just couldn't cope. I don't know if it was going to, he'd been at big clubs in England, but coming up and playing for Rangers, and right at the very start, he said, "No, I'm going to come up and I'm going to be player of the year, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that." So I don't think that helped him, but he's just trying to keep himself out there and have people talking about Joey Barton.
Well, you speak to some of the people that were at Rangers at that time when he was there, when it was starting to blow up and he got the suspension. One or two have said that part of Barton's problem was that he just wanted higher standards. He's a real high expectation level, high standards, and wanted the players and the manager at that time, Mark Warburton, to try and lift themselves towards that. Can you see where he's coming from, or do you think he overstepped the line by taking the manager on in front of the dressing room and stuff?
I don't think you can do that with players these days. Like we've seen before, I don't think a guy like a controversial guy like him who comes up here with younger players, I don't think they react to it. I think he could have done it in a better way. Coming in and slaughtering people, it's just not going to help. With younger players coming through the system, they didn't respond to that. They need an arm round their shoulder. But I think him and Crankchar are two good players. I just think the league was far too quick for them. I remember I was at his debut against Hamilton. Mm-hmm. The wee boy Crawford. Ali Crawford ran him ragged. And I think partly because he was struggling, he tried to dish it out to the teammates and kind of take the spotlight off him because he was getting so much stick, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I think he was trying to pass the buck on to other players, if I'm honest.
What I've heard on it, and I don't know again how true this is, and what he's come out and said, that I don't know if it happened, but Mark Warburton left the kind of the meetings open. So if you had something to say, you could say it.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever he'd done, he turned around and said they didn't like it. But his point was, well, you're allowing us to speak, kind of thing. So why can we not do that? But obviously overstepped the mark in what he said. But again, you've got to look at it. You're right what you said. If you're looking at it for that side, then if you're going to leave it open to players to come in and say what they think after a game and they go over the mark, then it's kind of the manager as well that he's allowing that to happen. So you're not going to get them to come in every week and be positive about how it's happening, or we're going to fix this, we're going to do that. At some point there's going to be fingers pointed, and I think that's maybe what he's done.
Because you'd be one for that, Jazza, wouldn't you? You would stand and say something.
Yeah, no, I think there's not enough yet now. Uh-huh. You see it.
To the management or to your teammates, in terms of having your say?
Well, if the manager's wanting that and you can then, and he asks for your opinion and you can give him it, then I would have no qualms giving it to the manager as well. I don't mean giving it in hammering or saying your tactic, but what I think. I think growing up in some teams I played in, that happened, and there'd have been a lot of senior players having a go at each other. But from what I've heard, again, I don't know if it's true, but Mark Warburton wanted that, and he wanted the players to...
Yeah, encouraged it, didn't he?
Yeah, so if he's saying that, and then Joey Barton's coming in and doing kind of what he's asking, yeah, he's probably a bit more negative than he wanted him to be, or a bit, but what you said, it's his standard, so if he's going to come in and then expect them not to kind of overstep that line, then I don't know how you get an in-between. You can't really come in and say to them, well, we want you to be like that to each other, but not go too far. How do you work that? They've just been beat, or tensions are high, I don't know. So no, I would have no problem with going in and having an opinion in a dressing room if that's what the manager wanted.
So let me bring us up to date then. So you're now a coach. So what kind of coach will you be in terms of the dialogue your dressing room? Are you going to invite an open dressing room, or would you prefer things to be, if players want to have their say, that it's done in private?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be I'm hoping to be a different coach than what I was as a player. I think at times I got too over animated, over excited, and negative at times coming in after games. Simon will probably agree with that. I don't know.
If it was me, you were usually shouting it, wasn't it?
No, you were one of the ones I didn't need. No, but I don't know. I think it'll be different. I've watched a lot of managers I've worked with, and kind of took the good bits and certainly took the bad bits from that as well. And I'm kind of, I think at times you can just go in and be calm. Obviously there's times when you need to go in and blast them, but I don't agree with that. If that's true, what Warburton done, allowing that to happen straight after a game, because it's, especially if you've lost, you're at a big club, everybody's adrenaline's going, everything's going, it can just cause problems. So it's an interesting one, but I don't think it's something I would really encourage if I was a manager.
Getting back to Barton's comments, Simon, do you think there's just a complete ignorance from him towards our game up here, even though inverted commas, played in it for 3 months?
But Jazz, I'll tell you, so see, when you're doing that, they look at the league as a pub league, they do. I remember at Portsmouth, Scottish football would come on the dressing room, like Nicky Shorey and that, which I'd get that pub football off, and I'd end up arguing with him for about 2 hours about it, do you know what I mean? But there is definitely they look down at the league, there's no doubt about that, and that's for guys that couldn't even kick their arse in League 2, and I used to say that to them. There's no way you'd play up there. But there is a definite a snideness towards Scottish football, but as it says on here, Van Dijk, Robertson, you can't argue with it.
Mm-hmm.
Wanyama, Fraser Forster, Gary Hooper, there's been loads of them that have went down there and done well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think their league's much better than what it is. I think Scottish football is talked down, but I don't agree with what they say.
In terms of when you look at how much satisfaction does it give you then, James, as a Scotsman, you see somebody like Andy Robertson going down there, holding his own, playing at the highest level for Liverpool, having assists, the cop chanting his name, Jurgen Klopp saying he should be the captain of Scotland. You know, when you see that boy was playing for Queen's Park 5 years ago, to where he is now, you know.
No, it is, and it's great seeing him. I love watching him. He comes across as a great boy as well. When you hear him speaking, very humble, and just everything about him I like. He's a very good player. But even going back to what Simon was saying, I agree totally with that. When you go down, they say, oh, this league's rubbish up here. But there's also ones before, like your Robertsons and your Van Dijk, you've got Snodgrass, Dorans, all of them, they go down, and like, they were top players in the Championship. And you can throw it back again. I played with Danny Fox at Coventry. He came up here, and he'll probably tell you himself he couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm. Tony Mowbray signed him, didn't he?
Yeah, he's coming to a club at Celtic. So yeah, that's, you can maybe say that's why. And again, it goes back to the Barton thing. Can he handle coming to a club like Rangers? But when he came up to Celtic, he just couldn't handle it. I don't know how long he lasted. Was it even a year?
Yeah, I think.
He goes back down, and then he's playing at Notts Forest again, and he's been promoted with Burnley, stuff like that, and he's like an established, very good Championship player, verging on Premier League, but he came up here and they couldn't handle it. So, no, it's all the time that, and I had the same as Si, they were hammering the game up here, but I just used to think I'd love some of them to come up and try and play in it, because a lot of them couldn't cope.
When you look at some of the, you know, the figures that players leave the Scottish game from when they're playing at the highest level up here, do you think our really good players are sold in the cheap? For example, again, and I know he came from Dundee United, but Andy Robertson, £2 million originally from Hull to Dundee United. You look at like your Wanyama's 10-11 million, and then Van Dijk, same again, 10-12 million, but they're going for 20-30-40, in Van Dijk's case 75 million. Should we be digging our heels in a wee bit more up here and getting
even
more
Robertson
money?
When he went down there at Hull, I thought he was one of the best left backs in the Premier League for Hull, and he went for £8 million.
Well, he was linked with Arsenal within six months, wasn't he?
If he was a foreign, he'd go for £20 million.
Yeah,
it's just, as I say, it's a
that's what I'm saying though. So is it people in our game,
definitely,
the power brokers in our game at club level, digging a heel saying, you know, no more in the cheap from up here?
Definitely. Even I remember the wee boy for St Mirren goes down England, like, for £200,000, whereas down there, if you're wanting an 18-19 year old that are flying, you're paying £3 million. Mm-hmm. I mean, clubs totally undervalue their players, and it's only when they go down there and they show how good they are that should be asking for much more for our players, no doubt, 100%.
You agree with that, James?
I do, but I also look at the other side of it, and if somebody's coming into like Dundee United, and they're offering, was it £2 million for Andy Rock? They're offering that in Dundee United, I think, and we had him at, we got him for Queen's Park a few years ago, it's a great chance to make £2 million, and then if somebody's coming in and offering even more, £5-6 million for a player, it's hard for a club in Scotland to knock that money back, just because I totally get the point. Yeah, they're selling them at a rate that's lower than what it would be if they were in the Championship in England or coming for a foreign team. But
and you didn't want to stand in the boys' way as well, eh?
And that's the other point, exactly. When Andy Robertson's getting the chance to go and play in the Premier League, and he probably thinks it's fair, and Dundee United are getting £2 million for him when he didn't really cost them anything. And how do you turn around to that boy and say, look, no, you're not going?
Is it not relevant? For me, I always look at the analogy of comparing when Scottish clubs go to buy players from Ireland. Now, we wouldn't pay up here, you wouldn't pay £1 million for a player for Ireland because he's unproven, he's playing in the Irish League. Is that not similar to the way that, unless it's like a club like Celtic Rangers, you've played in the Champions League, you're maybe an international foot, you show that you can step up. But you wouldn't get Celtic or Rangers or Aberdeen or Dundee United or Hearts paying £1 million.
You're probably right, because for all the Andy Robertsons, there's ones that have went down and no done it. English clubs have probably paid money for them and they've went down there and they couldn't handle it. But
me,
you never know until you. I don't think you can ever know if a player's going to do well or not until they're down there. So what you're saying is probably right, Mark. I would say, you just didn't know how that style of, like, the style of football down there suited me much better than the style of football up here.
You said that to me as soon as you came
up. Couldn't believe it, mate, how
even
quick it
when
was.
We were playing.
In what way?
Just down there, it was, you keep the ball for a couple of minutes and we keep the ball, but up here it was just like a basketball game.
I genuinely can remember you saying that to me at the start, and I could get that because I had been down there as well, and it was like 100 mile an hour, you were saying, up here.
100 mile an hour, we played Aberdeen, this my second game, and it was like playing against the fucking Red Arrows, honestly. Johnny Hayes with Rogers running forward, and I was like, I'm blown out of my arse. I was like 20 minutes in, I was like, I'm blown out of my arse here, man. But down there, you keep the ball a bit more, do you know what I mean? It's more tactical, I would say. But up here, it's the pace of the game, and it's so hard. I found coming fade down there, up here, I just really struggled.
Did you go back down then?
No, I wouldn't put that on anyone though. No. I wouldn't go anywhere.
just to finish off this part, get back to the original point about Joey Barton. James said he was hopeless. How would you have described his contribution to Rangers and to Scottish football over 4 months?
I was expecting a lot more from him. As I say, I think he's a good football player. And I think Krajicek falls into the same boat. I think two good football players, but again, I just don't think the league suits them. You need to have legs to play up here. You need to be able to run. I remember when Brendan Rodgers got the job up here, his first thing he said, only sign players that can run, because you need it up here. And I just think they two were lacking in that massively.
But surely there must be some way where, even if you're 33, 34, 35, 36, surely game intelligence could get you through in a lot of the games up here, even if you've not got the legs.
That did happen. I mean, you've seen that, it's not a big name like Joey Barton, but Jody Morris come up and he was excellent for St Johnstone, but again, he didn't have the expectation. He didn't come out and say, I'm going to come up and be the best player in this league and do this and do that. So right away, that was on his shoulders. So yeah, you can see that they should come up, and you'll have certain players that can come up, and you say Graham Dolan's hasn't he got the legs to come up and run about the way he used to have, but when he gets fit, he'll be a very good player for Rangers just because of the way he plays. With Joey Barton, just whatever happened with him, he come up and it was just too much for him for me.
Do you think that the insults will continue to come for Joey Barton towards Scottish football? I mean, he just seems to have a wee pop every few months. I wrote as well, listening to the radio, he'll have a pop at Mark Hughes as well, obviously, as his ex-manager. It seems to be he's a guy that carries agendas and kind of let things go, you know?
Just as you say, he's there to stay relevant. And I seen him having a go at Carragher for the thing that he'd done. Obviously, it was terrible, but some of the things that Joey Barton's done in his life.
Yeah.
Pot kettle, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's obviously got a brass neck to come. He obviously doesn't care what the repercussions of what he says. So if he can deal with that, then fair play to him.
An old Scottish saying, I think you couldn't mark him with a blowtorch. But anyway, moving on, we're on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. I'm Mark Guidi, joined by Open Goal Simon Ferry and the Dundee coach James McPake. We're moving on to our next topic. It is the Scotland national team and one of the new coaches, James McFadden, on Alec McLeish's backroom staff. He said that as a nation, and particularly the squad of players, we need to create more belief. We need to have a stronger belief to qualify for a tournament. Having not qualified for a major tournament for 20 years, I suppose James has got a point. James?
Yeah, and it's how do you create that? Mm. Exactly what you say. It's been 20 years, so how do you go in and say, right, we need to create a belief to go and do this, or to come up with a way of doing it? I don't know how you do it. The only way you can turn around and do it is by going and qualifying. But no, I get his point and how we look down on. I think the pundits do it as well. I do, being as a player, like, even playing, if watching games that maybe somebody makes a bad pass up here, they'll turn around and say, that was just hopeless, or that was bad. What's he doing there? Where you listen to Gary Neville, and I know this is going away from the McFadden thing and whatever, but you listen to Gary Neville and he'll turn around and say, he'll be disappointed with that. It's not like that. That was just that's just terrible. How can he do that? How can he not make that 10-yard pass?
So which pundits in particular, let's really open this up then and broaden it. Which pundits in particular up here do you think just maybe take it a step too far, or could word things differently?
No, I think on the whole, I think we could all just talk the game up better, because what we've got to realise is there's people watching it as well from all over the place. So if they keep hearing this negative stuff, now there is a lot of good ones. Like we spoke about Chris Sutton, I love listening to him because I think he's just honest. So you get him the same way all the time. So for me, that's great. But there's just ones that you can see all the time that everything's negative. Like everything they say, everything when they're watching games.
Give us a name.
Charlie Nicholas is Charlie on Sky Sports. Charlie Nicholas is so negative.
I just tell Sky that one.
Right, Charlie, so you think Charlie Nicholas takes it too far?
He's so negative about Scottish. How's that helping? Do you know what I mean? We'll come up with an idea, Charlie, if it's so bad. Come up and help us out. Mm-hmm. If you've got the answers, come up and help us get the game better, because that's what we all want, innit? Mm-hmm. And I think James McFadden, I loved his interview yesterday. I really did. I thought he was spot on. And do you know what I see with players like McFadden and Ferguson? See, interviewing them, they've got that arrogance. I think that's what makes a top player. I don't think Ferguson or McFadden was miles
Barry
better
Ferguson,
than
you
Barry Ferguson,
yeah.
But you could see that they had that belief in themselves, and I think that really lacks in Scotland, 100%.
But then you say that they had the belief, but there's also was there not, because Barry and James never made it to a major tournament. You think of the great careers at club level, brilliant footballers, and yet they were part of
I
that generation.
I think if we could get the other nine with the same attitude as they two had, then we would have qualified. I mean, you look at somebody like Joey Barton, who's bang average, and he thinks he's the best player in the world. I think we really like that in Scotland, even with kids. I see kids that are so unconfident when they're playing football, when they're good players. I mean, you go down south and you play against boys that are hopeless, and they honestly think they're the best player in the world. There's a real self-belief down there that we need to get into our game, I think. People might say it's arrogance, but I think you need that to be a top player. McGeady had that. McGeady had an arrogance about him, and that's what made him the player he was, and we need that mayor in Scotland 100%.
So you think James is spot on, and I've heard Alec McLeish saying this a number of times over the years as well, and I think Gordon Strachan too, that we do need to instil more belief, more confidence, and you know, stop putting ourselves down, stop before you run out of the pitch. On an everyday life, kids get into a classroom believing, oh, I'm no good, I'm not going to survive today, kind of type thing.
Yeah. My kids don't have, my kid's six. Every time you, at school, oh, I'm hopeless at it. Six, how can you be hopeless at it? Everyone else is, but it's just a mentality that probably comes from me telling me he's hopeless, but it's a real problem in Scotland, isn't it, I think.
Even in the kids I'm coaching, and you see, everything's negative. Like, they come off the pitch and, I don't know, some people say this is good, I don't think it is, or they don't really, they're no bothered about the good stuff they've done. They're more worried about the bad passes or whatever. Yeah, if you made a mistake, they give a goal away, of course it's going to annoy you, but we're in a society just now where it's just so negative. In football terms, I think, I see the boys in training and they do something wrong and they're just walking about shaking their head for the next 10, 15 seconds. I'm going, look, it doesn't matter, we're training. But it's just, I don't know, it didn't used to always be like that, I don't think. It couldn't have been, because I don't know why it's getting worse, but I see that, and my job most of the time now is picking boys up, let me see, come on, like, it doesn't matter, encouraging them. I'm going, like, that shouldn't really be the case. Miss a chance, fuck it, just go get the other man, go and do something.
But it's
else.
True what you say, because it's meant to be, particularly the last sort of 10, 15 years, where coaching from that age, even parents on the sideline to coaches at kids going up to the youth level that you're at, where they're encouraged, don't shout at them anymore. You know, be positive, don't give them a rollicking the way you used to get 20, 30 years ago when you're a kid. So why is it, even though you're not getting rollicked, there is still that, you know, you go way into a shell, and I mean, you heard Mourinho talk about it all night, players hiding, you know, actually kidding on that they're looking for, but they're not really, and that's a confidence thing.
I think social media and the forums and everything else has got a massive part to play on it, because I can remember when I started, if I had a bad game, it was just, I was at Livy, so we'd have been about 200 fans there, so it was only been the 200 fans, the journalists, whatever, knew I had a bad game, so you know, it's like, people are writing on social media, they go in the forums, and then everybody goes and reads them, and but like the players, and I don't care what MD says, players go and read them, and they see everything's negative, hype. Si's great touches today, but he couldn't chase the boy back. But they're not talking about all the good stuff he done. Saying, but what about the bad stuff? Why are we not saying, oh, Si, what about getting him on the ball? He's the type of player I want in my team. He'll take it anywhere. He'll take it under pressure. I love that. But you know what? We've got to get that away, that other side of it at times, because the quality, I'm just using Si's, no, as an example, as a player, because he's sitting next to me as a name. Why do we not go into the positives of what he can do? The positives, what the Andy Roberts can do. You see people on Twitter saying, oh, he's no great at defending.
I know, it's madness.
But what else does he do? He is good at defending, but he's that good at going forward, it takes it away from what he can do defensively. Everybody thinks he should be, me man, if he was as good at defending as he is going forward, like in terms of the way you weigh it up, then he'd be the best left back ever.
Well, that's the thing as well, you hear what James is saying there, and you do the phone and you do different things, and a lot of supporters just want to come on. Of most clubs, particularly Celtic and Rangers, after a bad result, and what they want to do is pick faults in the player. He's a yard slow, his left foot's no great, he should be better in the air. Or if it's the manager, he's tactically naive, he's no plan B. You say, well, with all respect, if they were that good, they wouldn't have been in Scottish football. They'd be away. They'd be in La Liga, or they'd be at the top level down south. So as a nation of supporters, and you're right, pundits, media as well, you've got to allow for faults in people's game, because there won't be the perfect player or the perfect manager operating up here at this level. So we do need to create a different mindset, and hopefully that it trickles down, and from the other side trickles its way up.
See, up here as well, the papers, like, see, Sunday, Monday, it's Friday, it's every day you're reading about yourself, and it's ratings on a Sunday, ratings on a Monday, and usually it's fives and sixes, and but if boys are reading that, how do you go again on a Saturday and play?
I know.
Down there, you read the paper, maybe you get the local paper, but like the national paper, you're never in it, and but up here it's just constant, isn't it? It's papers every day.
And it's just battered.
If you stop buying the Peterhead Bugle, you still get it.
I'm banned. They've stopped writing stories about me.
But just to quickly finish off on this subject, just looking ahead, Friday night at Hampden Park, Alec McLeish's first came back as national manager. Hopefully it's the start of a positive 2018 when we can finish top of the group with Israel and Albania. His first game, important to get a good result and find one or two players, Simon.
Definitely. As again, talking about Faddy's interview, the way he spoke about Alex McLeish actually got me on side, mm-hmm. saying about how much belief he gave him as a player. And I just hope that, I think these boys need that. I think they need a motivator who can go in and make them feel good about themselves. And I hope that the day justice, obviously it's only friendlies just now, but it'd be good to see how Alex McLeish wants to play. I'm quite interested to see if he just goes back to old 4-4-2 mm-hmm. or whether he's changed as a coach. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping he comes up with something a bit different, because I would like to see that for him. But for McFadden's interview, I'm full of belief.
And for you, James, obviously, you know, Scott McKenna, you've been a central defender yourself, Aberdeen central defender Scott McKenna, and a guy that you know well, and Derek McInnes rates him as the best centre-half in the country. Do you think he's ready now to go and get a try-out on Friday night?
Oh, definitely. I think he's ready to go in. He's had a good start to this season, and I've seen him a lot. I've seen him in the 20s. We actually tried to get him on loan a few years ago as well, and we couldn't get him out of Aberdeen, and I have seen him. Big. He's got a lot that can go on. Whether he's the best in the Premier League just now, I'm not too sure, but you've got to put him in and test him at that level, because it's been well noted recently that we've struggled a wee bit with centre backs, people are saying. So no, I'm looking forward to seeing him get in there. I like him. I like what he's about. I like.
He's aggressive, isn't he?
Aye, I've heard he's big, he's strong, mm-hmm. aggressive, and
he's got a decent turn of pace. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Aye,
he's not bad. Yeah, a decent turn of pace.
And then obviously the boy Lindsay, that I'm surprised that he never got the call up.
You like Hanlon as well, Jazz? You've always liked Hanlon, didn't you?
That would be, for me, I was delighted when Paul got into that mm-hmm. squad the last time. Since I played with him, I said it, and I don't know what it is that holds him, why people don't rate him. I know the Hibs fans love him. And
what's his qualities? What's he got, James?
He plays football. Yeah, I mean, never panics. I think when you're looking for that type of centre back, like we were talking about, Jack Henry, similar, mm-hmm. great on the ball, but Paul can defend as well, and I think through time he's got even better. And you see at Hibs, no matter who, all the centre backs were fit, even with Stubbs. And then when Lenny came in, when they had Fontaine, McGregor, Ambrose, whoever, Hanlon was the one that always played when he was fit. So these managers have seen something that I thought I'd seen as well. And he's played that many games for Hibs now as well, and I just thought, I was disappointed actually that mm-hmm. he never got the chance to play in that last squad. Mm-hmm. They took him in, I was delighted for him and never put him on, and then to see him not back in again is, I thought, in the league for me, he's been the best centre back watching this year.
And the time they've been up at Hibs, I've not seen him make a mistake. Can I think of a goal that's been Paul Hanlon's fault? Mm-hmm. So I think he's real steady, Eddie, and like you say, if the way that Peter want to play football now is playing for the back, I think he's a perfect centre half for starting it.
The ones that Alec McLeish does have to choose from Friday night and beyond, is it as straightforward as, well, A, we don't know if he's going to play a back three, if it's C centre half, or if he's going to play four with a partnership. Is it as straightforward, James, as Charlie McGrew plus one other, or do you think two positions up for grabs?
I think the season Charlie's had as well, again, he's another player I really do like. I think the season he's had, he's probably coming up thinking he deserves to play. So I would have him in, and I'd like to see somebody else though. I'd like to see McKenna in. He's in the squad. Again, it goes back to that last time, like when Malky picked the squad and never put like Paul on it. If you've got him in the squad, we've not seen him, put him in.
Let's see, definitely.
So McKenna's there, put him in, let's see what he's got. He's in a great season.
We've seen hundreds of Hanley and...
So why not just
try something different?
Definitely.
I think the fans want to see that as well. Don't, of course. That was one of the things that was Gordon Strachan was accused of. Is maybe just sticking to too many of the same things. So let's hope that it's freshened up a wee bit. And Alec McLeish and his new backroom team and his new squad getting a result on Friday night against Costa Rica. Tickets still available, I believe. £15 for adults, £5.
Where is that?
Friday night, Hampden Park.
I'll be there.
I won't take your kids along, get them involved in the international team. Always does good to give the SFA a wee plug. Anyway, here we go. Last part of the show. We're on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. In the final 10 minutes, the referee's looking at his watch. James hasn't got injured yet. He's still sitting there. Climber, absolutely delighted that he's looking great. But James, we're going to finish off with just talking about yourself. You've obviously, you had to retire far too early, which is a great shame for any person. But take us back to the injury, January 2016, the derby game against Dundee United.
Yeah, again, just like getting in any tackle. I think I've had a bit of abuse for the tackle or whatever, but it was a derby. We'd lost the week before, so the last thing going out was we need to go out and make a mark on this game. And John Ryan gets the ball 25 yards out for a short corner they take, and we all know what John Ryan can do. He could stick it in the stands, so fly out, and unfortunately he kicks my trailing leg, and just a freak one. I've been in the tackles in training. You go in them in games, you'll see loads and loads of players, and probably at the time I thought, I could just get it fixed and I'll come back. It's probably only now I look back and realise the damage it was actually done that day, and what I've kind of had to go through after it. That's been really frustrating.
I take it then, so obviously going with what you're saying, that day, even when you're going to the hospital and you're getting the operations, you still thought you would make it back?
Yeah, even probably up until 4 or 5 months afterwards, when we'd spoke to we had the best surgeons, and at the time they were saying, look, I think there were only one conversation I had with one, and he says, look, we're going to try and get you back. And I kind of thought, look, that's just a slip of the tongue. He's not really meant to say that. And so I never even thought anything of it until later on. Now I sit back and say, by the way, he was probably giving me that and hoping I kind of got it in my head a wee bit. So that was open. But I got back, and I played a few under-20s games, but it wasn't right, so I went back in again. That would have been the third time they went in, so I went back to London in again, done a bit, and then I went to America with the club. They've got a kind of soccer school type thing out there for kids, so I went out and done a week over there, come back. I was back a day and kind of slipped in a wet tile. No, even like a fall, just a wee slip and felt a pop. What was that? And then, so this hasn't all come out. We kept all this away because it would just be like, oh, this is happening. It was my choice for the club not to put it out, and they were great with that. And so I had ruptured my quadriceps tendon, so again back down to London to do that. And funny enough, it felt great after that. It was like the best it had felt, and that was last year. About this time last year, yeah, last May. Got back round about this Christmas, ready to do it, and into training, and hit a shot and just felt another wee pop. So I got to that point. I had been in the 24 month or whatever. I had probably been 15, 16 of them in a brace on and off at times, and two young kids that are now 3 and 4, and I thought, nah, I can't keep doing it. So I went, we says to the surgeon, he's going to do this, and he says, well, we still think there's a chance we can get him back. And the club were saying, they were great, it was up to me, but they were saying, well, if you're going to make this decision, you need to do it, and it's got to be up to you to do what you want to do, but we'll back you, whatever. They've been great, different class. But I went home, spoke to my wife, and just says, you know what, like, I'm 33 now, how long am I going to get back for, a year or whatever? So I just decided, and the opportunity to come up to coach.
Uh-huh.
So I thought
that made it a bit easier to hang the books up.
Yeah, and that was always there, so I could have said after a year I want to do that, and the club would say we'd do that. But I just got to a point. The weird thing was, Craig Whiting was in the gym with me every day, Josh Meekins, who'd came for Inverness, and I was ahead of them. There were a point I was ahead of them, and they were catching me up. Great for them, because I was buzzing, especially Whitey. I was delighted to see Whitey getting back. But it was a wee blow for me when, sounds weird, but they were getting out to train and play, and I was then back in the gym, going back a wee bit. And it wasn't, if it was just about me, that kept going. But I've got a wife and two kids that I had to just say, nah, they've had enough. So that was it, really. And I thought it'd be easiest stopping and getting into coaching, but it's harder now. The hours I'm working now, man.
Is it?
Torture, man. You know, when you're a player, you get in, you just get showered and you get home. See, now, stuff I've got, I thought it'd be easy, but no, the boys are great. I'm enjoying doing that, but I train now and again with them, and again, and I take part in the boxes and maybe play the B5Os, and my knees swelt for 2 days after it. So
is it as bad as
that? I kind of do that to reinforce it in my head that I made the right decision. Some days again I say, I feel great, I should still be trying this, and I do that. And so I'm going to get a wee tidy up, hopefully in the summer, and that'll be the end of it. through there. So no, it's been good.
You mentioned earlier in the programme in terms of, you know, some of the managers that you worked with, you take the good bits on board, and you certainly won't forget the bad bits that you won't use in your coaching career. So just take us through some of the highs and the lows and some of the characters that you've been involved with during your career.
Well, the one that stands out for me was Chris Coleman. When you asked me what kind of manager I want to be, he's the best I've ever worked for. And to be fair, we'd a lot of big egos and good players at Coventry at the time in the Championship when he was a manager, and I'm no joking when I say this. If you were a young boy going in, you'd say, I want to be like Cy, I want to be like Clint Morrison, the youngest, Callum Wilson was there, the boy at the Bournemouth. You'd think, I want to be like him. You wouldn't. Everybody wanted to be like Chris Coleman. I swear, he was so cool. Just everything about him, that's just the way he carried himself, you seen. And I could see it at Wales, or at the Euros when Wales were in the semi-finals, and all the players, Gareth Bale, they're all running to him. And he's saying, oh, how good a manager he is. And he made you feel brilliant. Didn't do much, and you go, and I'm no harm on Terry Butcher here, but he was the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. Like, Chris Coleman took nothing to do with you, really, apart from he'd pull you in and say, right, you're no playing for this, right, fine, no bother. And he was very kind on the outside, like his coaches do it. But
Stevie Keane was his
coach? Yeah, Stevie Keane was there the first time, and then Steve Harrison came in, and Keane left. Keane went to Blackburn, and he was great as well, but Keane took everything, done all the, but what he done, man, you think, oh, How can you have that? How can you be scared of somebody like that? But see, when he went, man, he went.
Scary.
He hardly ever done it. Uh-huh. So it was when he hammered you, it was really.
You knew he meant it. Uh-huh.
You were scared, but Butcher done it every day. So it got to a point where he's shouting again. I'm not really bothered. So going back to taking the good bits and the bad bits away from it, well, I want to be more of a Coleman than the way he was, and kind of you want the effect, don't you? You're well fed it.
Of course.
And he just goes all the time, and you're like, ah,
same old.
Did
he not ask you who your heroes was? Butcher and Sean Murdoch said Duncan Bannington.
Aye.
You know the goalie at Dunfermline got stitched up. Duncan Bannington.
The Dragon's Den.
Dragon's Den.
He fell out with me as well. He was going to run it, and he says, oh, honest, this is the God's honest truth. What kind of dog would you be?
Terry Butcher said it.
Sitting in the restroom, I says, a Labrador. He started shaking his head. I'm like, what's wrong with Labrador? He says, nah, I want you to be a lion, or a Rottweiler, not a lion, sorry, a Rottweiler. I says, how? He says, because you're a centre back, I want you to be fierce. He's like, why do you want to be a Labrador? I was like, I've got a Labrador. I like my dog.
Brilliant.
And another one, but we're playing Celtic. And to be fair, this did work. Because I've spoke to the boys at Inverness and they liked us. So again, I'm no hammering them because there was a lot of good stuff. There was. So they got them out to blow up balloons.
Uh-huh.
And we had a psychologist come in, Big Davey was called. So he came in and we're blowing up balloons, and you had to put all your fears into the balloon. Right? So burst the balloon. On my daughter's life, right? Burst the balloon and all your fears are gone. Like, so I'm sitting going, right, that's brilliant. So I'm about to play Celtic. Teams come in, Sam Arras is on the bench. So all my fears are away, right? I'm not scared about Coleman strapping in, getting it, turning a Hooper running off my shoulder. Then like that, I'm going, if Sam Arras comes on after 65 minutes when we're shattered, I'm going to get another balloon.
Can I get a
balloon? just stuff like that. It didn't work for me, it worked for some, and to be fair, Kevin Thompson and Alan Mabry had a few arguments with the psychologist about it as well. But then it worked for some of the boys, so you can't knock that. But again, I think it's got to be up to you. I could come in and say, do you want to do that? And you could say, hey, that'll work for me, that'll be great. Or I could go to Si and say, he's like, I'm not interested in that, I don't want to blow balloons up and burst them. So,
but you had to do it.
You had to do it, yeah.
That, so, you're right, it's got to be a personal decision, actually.
For me, so that's the wee things that, but it worked.
But see on that, I mean, Hibs went down, they're back up now and they're thriving, but they were down there for three years. I mean, you hear the stories of the players deliberately get the manager the sack they wanted to get out of the door. Was that subconsciously what was going on then in the Hibs dressing? Did you guys just switch, not necessarily switch off for the club, but just a lot of you switch off for Terry?
No, definitely not. I don't think at that club, we had a lot of Hibs supporters at the club as well at the time, and that we had a bad season, we knew that, but in 17 games I think I'm sure we needed one win.
Mm-hmm.
So for what we couldn't get it, I'm still gutted in the way I left. I've come out and said this, that I genuinely do think I could have helped. Like, I got back in April, March, so I had surgery in December. I was fit to play in probably March, April. And for whatever reason, again, it was I think at that point he genuinely thought we were safe.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, well, he's known my plans anyway. Yeah. Tomo wasn't in his plans. He eventually had to bring Tomo back in. But there were players that just weren't in his plans that he thought were safe anyway. But I went to him and I said, look, no matter what's happened, put me in. I hadn't played, the last game I played was in November against Hearts. And so I hadn't played in that time, but I still thought I had enough to go in and try. And all we needed was a win. So I was disappointed in the way it ended. There, because I really did like it there, and it left a wee bit of a shadow on my time at the club because of that, because the way it all happened. But not everything else apart from that, I loved it.
When you think back to that penalty shootout loss to Hamilton Ack, it was a hell of a day for the club, wasn't it?
No,
playoff.
It was, even the first leg, like Jason Cummings scores the two goals, and
was that a touch an angel? No, what was that?
No, that was. Touch of Angel was against Rangers at Ibrox when Alan Stubbs was the manager.
It should have been done. We went to Hamilton, we'd won 2-0, but at no point did it should have. For me, that's coming. I get left out. I was in the stand again. I thought, like, why don't we even have me there for? What happens if somebody gets sent off or we need something? We need to defend for the last 10 minutes, surely. I could have went on and won a few headers. So. It was disappointing the way that ended, but even going there, we a minute to go, I think it was done, and then they end up scoring, and it goes to extra time and penalties, and it really was sad. But see, looking back now, it's been a blessing for the club, because the club's as healthy as it's been. I know the boys are loving it, and they've obviously been on and won the Scottish Cup since then. And would that have happened if Terry and Maurice Malpass would have stayed? I can guarantee it wouldn't have.
Okay, well, we want to finish on a high, because we hate finishing otherwise Simon's distraught for the rest of the week. He can't concentrate on his other duties, like try to big up his wee boy rather than send him to school threatening to get in. So hi, pick his one, James, from your career. Pick his one that sticks out for you. If you were given 30 seconds
meeting Paul McGowan
to sort something out,
Gowser's a definite high.
That's his mate for Dundee, they two together.
I need more than 30 seconds to talk about him. He's
tell him about the car school.
The car school's been, this is a genuine high playing like my career, I swear. I think even if I'd won everything, this car school was brilliant. So it would just be different stuff. Beat the heat, driving up to Dundee with the heaters on.
You were known to first person to say I can't take it anymore, I had to get the coffees or something.
Coffees
so.
And right. Lunch, big jeeps it was involved in.
So, we need to, for the listeners that don't know the nickname, so there's James McPake, there's Paul McGowan,
Gary Harkins.
Si,
were you there?
I was in a couple of times.
Simon Ferry.
Gary Irvine, was it?
Gary Irvine was driving,
that was right.
So you're you're the kind of Glasgow, West of Scotland boys, going back and forward to Dundee every day, just to set the scene. Okay.
So jump the motor, didn't matter, it could be hot or cold outside. And Gary Harkins would always be the one, and he'd say, right, it would be the heat guys, and say, no, I'm not wanting to play. So me and Gowser are sat in the back, Jeebsy, Gary Irvine in the front, bang, heaters up, windy's loped, full way up, Gowser.
He's getting to his tap up.
He's punching the seat. And
rather than buy a coffee.
No, it's just because he knew that if he'd have gave up, we'd have
he's getting beat.
So this happened. Nobody gave up, so coming back to beat the heat again. We're all getting in. So this is a four training in to get showered, just because we're sweating that much on the way down. So nobody was getting beat again. We pulled into the services and just stopped.
It's still in that.
Aye. She says, we're no moving for here. So Gowser bang, door open. These are all effing this, effing that. Hitting the motor, everything.
But so I've seen him and Paul McGowan fight for an hour and a half. From Glasgow to Dundee, rolling about the back of a car.
Try to get what?
Just
not to get somebody to give up. Then okay. One day we get stopped with the police. Gary Irvine was driving. It was Nicky Lowe in the front, and me and Gowser in the back. And we thought it was Nicky Lowe, never had his seatbelt on. No, me and Gowser were fighting in the back of the motor. Now I'm saying to myself, I'm married, I've got two kids in the house, I'm 31 year old or whatever. I'm fighting with somebody in the back of your car. He's a definite high.
He's some man, isn't he?
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant boy.
And a footballing high to finish us off.
Probably going to Coventry was like being to the Scottish Cup finals and stuff, and obviously that didn't end very well, but like, the excitement of winning semis and all that. But I thought going down to Coventry was a, for all of us, were Dolan, Snodgrass, me, Lee Griffiths ended up going, but I can remember at the time everybody saying they'll no cope, like going for the Scottish First Division, then going to the Championship and seeing what Snod had done. Dolan's obviously ended up exceeding us and going to the Premier League and having that great season as well. Snoddy's done it now, Lee's come back up and done it here, but I thought I went down and done okay in the Championship. If it wasn't for injuries, I think I could have really played down there for longer. So that was a high, because the doubt, and obviously coming, the other high was getting back for the back surgery when everybody said I wouldn't. So they're the two highs, rather than winning games. I've never won a trophy, so I can't really say when we won that trophy.
Well, well, hopefully you win trophies as a coach. We wish you well in your coaching career, Dundee and wherever else
Perfect.
It takes you. James, thanks for joining us in the Open Goal podcast. Simon, thanks again.
Cheers,
for your company.
Much.
We've had 46 minutes. It's flown by. It's been terrific. And I know you'll join us again next week. Bye bye.